MyBookie.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This is hour two of the Paracast with Gene and Chris. Our guest is Lamont Wood. We're looking at the ancient or not so ancient anomalies we can find no explanations for. And we're trying to figure it out. Now, if you want to put your speculative hat on there, would you like to do that, Lamont, and suggest what the last anomaly you mentioned might be caused by?
The Voynich manuscript, the hand-lettered, hand-illustrated manuscript,
sure.
420, that appears to be a no-known language, but appear it possibly is a language, or pretty sure. There's a thing called OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and people with that have been known to sit down and invent their own language and write a book in it. But this was done in 1420, and whoever did it had access to the skill and the tools needed, which were not in wide circulation, and it probably took a year to do the thing. Usually when someone does that, analysis will usually show that they've taken their native language and, like, turned it 90 degrees or something. In the analysis, it'll surface when it's analyzed.
Well, the question would be then, it maybe somebody back then was doing what we do today to invent the Klingon language.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. It would only take one, but then you have to talk about the illustrations that go with it that consistently appear to depict something, but on closer inspection don't. Now, how would you do that over and over again? You think eventually you'd base it on something real just because it would be easier. I think this goes beyond OCD, but beyond that, I really can't say it. I'm mystified by this one. And I go so far as to think that maybe this is one of those reverse anachronisms from the future. We don't understand it because we're not equipped to do so. It's from because they have nothing in common with it. Maybe centuries from now we'll understand what it is. But I think for the moment we may as well get used to the idea we're not going to understand it. That may sound too simple. Not very satisfying, but that is what I've come to think looking at this.
Well, occasionally, if you don't have an explanation and you wear a hole in your head from scratching it, you have to kind of just cop a plea and say, this just absolutely doesn't make sense. Now, as you point out in your book, quite a number of very talented cryptologists and experts in code have looked at this and have been dumbfounded and stumped, which I think should be underscored here. It's not like average people like you, me, and Gene have looked at this and said, wow, that's kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, trained cryptologists have looked at this and they can't figure it out. And, right. And that alone, I think, is very, very it makes this, the Voynich manuscript, extremely intriguing. And it's one of the most enigmatic of all historical objects. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, I agree. You cannot find any rationality in it. You expect something, someone did it for a reason, but we can't determine what that is.
Or maybe that person was totally insane, seriously.
Yeah. Yes, and it would only take one, but that insane person, like I say, had access to some rather remarkable tools and skill and had free reign to use them for about a year or so and did so on a consistent basis throughout that time.
Wonder what his wife thought.
Yeah, really.
Honey, stop writing that gibberish and come in here and have your mutton stew.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, here's one that I've always been intrigued by, and I don't know how you would classify this, but there have been inventions in the past that we know through the historical record have existed, but yet the knowledge of it now has disappeared, and we don't have a sense of how ancient man or back. I'm referring to Greek fire would be, the classic example of technology that supposedly existed at the time that we can't figure it out now, and that also dovetails into the whole, I think it was 214 BC, siege of Syracuse and the use of advanced optics. Why don't you first, let's talk about Greek fire. I'm not sure if you mention it in your book, but let's go ahead and talk about...
I know what you're talking about, though. Well, you've got to remember, the ancients were secretive about it. This was, you know, secret military technology. But from various depictions we do find, we presume it was cheap gunpowder, basically, flash powder. The fact that they didn't shoot it out of tubes, well, they probably thought that was a dumb idea because, you know, it didn't have good metallurgy. The tube would burst, and, you know, better to throw it as a catapult, have it break open, than do nasty things at the other end. So it's been said that, Julius Caesar and Saladin and Richard the Lionhearted was probably as used to the smell of gunpowder as Napoleon, because Greek fire was used in their time. But again, they use it more as an incendiary than for explosives. You know, different environment, different approach. And it worked for them. So anyway, but the other, so you can't really say it went away. Probably we still have it. It's called gunpowder. Now, stuff that did go away, though, yeah, we still have that. You mentioned the Siege of Syracuse. That was in 212 BC, and there are three different Greek and Roman historians that give a blow-by-blow account of what happened, and they've been sitting on the shelf for 20 centuries now, and they read light science fiction. But then you have to remember that the head of defense planning for the city-state of Syracuse was a guy named Archimedes, whom you may have heard of. And apparently, whatever his reputation was, he exceeded it in real life. I think he was like the first mad scientist or something. The Romans, when they first assaulted the city, they described being met by a hail of indirect missile fire coming over the walls and on them, and tracked them as they moved, even to the base of the wall, which they didn't expect. And this implies three things. Highly tuned catapults with predictable results, accurate range finders, and central fire control. Now, you don't see that in Western technology until about 1912, oddly enough. Then they returned for a night attack. I mean, that one drove, they were driven away in the day attack. And they brought their ships up to a point on the seawall or directly faced navigable water. And at that point, they described these large machines rearing up from on the other side of the wall, which reached over and either smashed their ships or capsized them. I presume, again, it reads like science fiction, but like I say, these are histories are obviously based on first-hand accounts. I presume Archimedes came up with something that resembles modern construction cranes, so the upright mast and the horizontal mast, and these were swung out to drop things on the ships or to drop grappling hooks, which then lifted them out of balance and caused them to capsize. There's no mention of these machines in Archimedes' writings. In fact, he doesn't, in the surviving treatises that come down to us, and there are quite a few, he doesn't mention anything practical. It's all pure research. But the research topics are things like how to establish the balance point of a ship, which, of course, is a good thing to know if you're going to capsize them, and how to determine the volume of a curved object. Of course, the ship's hull is a curve, and once you know the volume, you know how much it weighs, and you can plan from there. And also, there was he once wrote on parabolic shapes, which is interesting because the Siege of Syracuse is also known for producing stories about the use of ancient Greek death rays, which we presume were billboard-sized arrays of polished metal mirrors, perhaps in parabolic shapes, used to set fire to enemy ships. Now, this is not as well documented. Those first-hand accounts I mentioned don't say anything about that. This shows up in later Byzantine and medieval accounts, but must have been based on something. Modern efforts to replicate this have had mixed results and discovered that it's not that easy to set a fire to a wooden ship, especially one for crew, you know, and buckets and stuff. But I point out that setting fire to a ship may have been, you know, secondary. The Romans were besieging the harbor. If in daylight they could, like, dazzle the pickup boats, it'd be easier to get the blockade runners going in and out. So that may have been the simple tactic. Just trying to drive away the guards and the pickets. which
so early non-lethal weapons technology.
Right. Yeah, if you didn't kill someone, you know, even better. But it wasn't necessary to do so.
I'll tell you what, we have Lamont Wood. The book is Out of Place in Time and Space. You're hearing Gene and Chris. You're listening to
The Paracast.
Have you been sitting on a few great domain name ideas but haven't locked them in for yourself? Good. Now you can buy them through the number one domain name registrar, Namecheap.com, as voted by the top tech blog Lifehacker. Just like the name says, you can buy domains cheap, as low as $2.99. And every new domain comes with WhoisGuard, our special privacy service, free for the first year. Now that you know, it's time to grab those domain names before someone else does. Namecheap.com. Go now. Namecheap.com.
Fate Magazine provides true reports of the strange and unknown. Keep up with the latest on angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, life after death, and much, much more. To receive your free issue of Fate Magazine, call now at 1-800-728-2730 or visit their website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
Gold is like nothing else on Earth. From the Romans through the Renaissance, from the Industrial Age to the Space Age, gold has weathered the test of time. For 6,000 years, gold has remained the ultimate store of wealth. According to the World Gold Council and the U.S. Mint, demand is at an all-time high. The stage is being set for the reemergence of gold as the common-sense alternative to a fiat paper currency that gets weaker every day. Midas Resources is proud to offer the hard-hitting report that arms you with the truth you need to protect you and your family from the Fed's plans for your hard-earned money. Don't gamble with your future. Call Midas Resources today and ask for your free copy of As Good as Gold. Call 1-800-686-2233 for the report the Fed hopes you'll never see. As Good as Gold can be yours by calling 800-686-2237. If you have ever thought about owning gold, you must read this report. Call Midas today at 800-686-2237.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape Harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-457-9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money-back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy Clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amounts. Hurry, go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news at theparacast.com. That's news at theparacast.com. And if you'd like to catch up on past episodes, we have hundreds of shows for you to download direct from theparacast.com. That's theparacast.com. Or check us out at iTunes.
We're back with Lamont Wood, non-lethal weapons, the topic of discussion, or at least one of the strange anomalies of the past, because the book is out of place in time and space. I want to just segue to one thing here, which we didn't get to before that much. Beliefs. Mm-hmm. What are the beliefs that seem strangely advanced for their time?
Belief in, like, antiseptic surgery, belief in monotheism, belief in the N-squared law of mutual attrition, which is kind of technical, but it's completely out of place. Little things like that. No, some of this is noise. Like, I point out the thing from Molly about Sirius, the star Sirius, that turned out to be noise. You look into it. But
it's just a one-of-a-kind, one-off, weird thing, and that's it?
No, I mean, it's like cross-cultural contamination.
Sure.
When you look at
you're referring to the Dogon borrowing from the Egyptian?
Yeah, it's supposed to have known that Sirius is a double star, basically. And where did they get that? Well, they got it from probably their people who have been serving the French army since World War I, and some of them must have read an astronomy textbook or something. There's no real evidence that they knew it was a double star or attached any importance to it. And I point out, without a fairly nice telescope, it's impossible for the human eye to separate the two. So it's noise, basically. It's like a cross-cultural contamination. There's plenty of other stuff. Speaking of military topics, like, say, there's Admiral Nelson at Trafalgar. He wrote this was in 1805, and he wrote a fairly detailed plan for what he was going to do that day, because he wanted them to attack the French fleet in a certain way based on the groupings of the French ships, and he was fairly precise about that. And we had no idea why he was so precise until 1916, when someone formulated what we now call the N-squared law of mutual attrition. And when you take his memo for the battle plan and apply it to that, you realize he was using that law, and it worked out perfectly. And he crushed the French fleet that day when, if he just sailed in there with no plan, they probably lost. We don't know if that's what he was using. He was killed that day by an enemy sniper. But, like I said, it fits perfectly. But that was like 111 years later. So, again, we don't know where it came from, how we knew that. But probably he spent a great deal of effort trying to figure out how to beat French, you know what I mean? And he came up with something that looks like the N-squared law of mutual attrition.
It's a lucky guess, or?
No, like I say, he spent a great deal of time analyzing the situation and what he was going to do. And the results look like the N-squared law. Or maybe he did formulate it himself. If so, he didn't write this up and leave it for anybody. We just don't know. But of course, he didn't survive the battle, so maybe he would have. I don't know.
Well, since we're on the subject of navies, how about the Hunley? The Hunley, the submarine, the first submarine that was seen to be impossibly ahead of its time to some people.
Well, yeah. When you look at it, it appears to have been designed by a modern engineer who knew what a submarine ought to look like and not to do. And it's all there, all the ballast tanks, the planes, everything you would put nowadays into a submarine if basically you had to, were stuck with using muscle power and lighting with candles, which is not really the way to do it, but that's all they had. And they made it work if you ignore the fact that it sank three times and drowned its crew each time. But if ignoring that, yes, they got it to work. It's a good example, not so much of a reverse anachronism, but of what I call the bleeding edge of technology. There's the leading edge, you know, the early adopters, people really in on something, and the bleeding edge, the people who really shouldn't be trying, and they're way too ahead of themselves. And this was a case of that. You know, good engineers presumably think in parallel because they're dealing with the same data, the same problems, the same goals. And so the people involved in this had the same goals as modern submarine designer. They just had far more limited resources. And it shows, basically. They're barely able to get it to work. So I think it's probably there's a lesson in that, I think, for all of us. I look at the space program nowadays, and I think, are we just, you know, the Hunley up there? I mean, we can barely get this to work. I mean, we shouldn't be expecting a whole lot from it. And that was the case here. And it did manage to go out and get 3 miles from shore and sinking in a warship one night and did not make it back, basically. We have since found the hull. We're not sure what happened to it. There's no holes in it or anything. But, like I said, well, they really
the
worked.
Design, the design was so far ahead of its time. It had a conning tower. It had advanced propeller mechanism, a torpedo of sorts. I mean, kind of not like we would think of a torpedo now. That's a really good example of leading edge technology. Another good example would be someone like Nikola Tesla. Now I don't see Tesla's name mentioned in your book.
No, well, I had to read something for a second edition.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. We get a scoop here at the Paracast.
Okay. But,
have you investigated Tesla? I mean, what do you think of Nikola Tesla?
Well, I'm not sure either. He wanted to do things that we still are not doing, which is to broadcast power, not radio signals, but actual power, so that you don't plug in the light bulb, you set it there, and his station from across town or something would power it. Now, and apparently worked to some extent. I'm not sure how safe it would be or be considered nowadays, but it was abandoned in his lifetime. And I tend to think it was abandoned for good reason, that it wasn't really as practical as he said it was. Some of the stuff, you know, works mathematically. And when you get into the actual field, it's more trouble than it's worth or something. And I suspect we're into something like that here. He was... both genius and madman. He was a very strange individual. He was the one who had love affairs of pigeons or something, and lived by himself. And it's a long story, anyway. But yes, he did things that we still haven't really figured out what he was talking about. That may be because some of it was gibberish, or some of it was over our heads, or something like that. And I think just now people are beginning to revisit some of the things he did, see if it's really practical.
So you don't buy into the whole theory that the U.S. government stole all his work, somehow was responsible or at least complicit in his death, and that there's no secret space program or secret weapons technology program of scalar weapons, creating earthquakes, steering the jet stream, all these wonderful HARP, the high oral atmospheric research program.
A lot of these conspiracy theories I run across, they have one thing in common, which is a belief that the U.S. government really knows what it's doing. And I don't see any other evidence of this, except for the
touché,
conspiracy theories themselves. Okay? And I'd love for some of them to be true, in fact.
At least you want to see, then, some evidence that the U.S. government or any government can possibly be efficient, can be responsible,
right.
Can actually know what they're doing. The book is called Out of Place in Time and Space. It rhymes. Lamont Wood is the guest with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes... The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockoids lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans the galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockoids is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockoids. A novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Hey, Bill, pick up line 3. It's Brian.
Hey, Brian, what's up?
Einstein here. Thanks. Hey, Bill, I just received my shipment of the safety net, our full-year emergency food system. I can't tell you how great it feels to personally not have to worry anymore, especially with the growing threats to our everyday food supply.
Brian, not only are you getting 4,320 nutritionally dense, delicious food servings, but the individual serving price is just $1.43 per meal. It's truly great tasting food at amazing prices.
The variety is also a huge bonus, Bill. It's like having access to a full menu of impressive food.
Well, it really is a safety net for those worried about the coming food shortages and how their families can prepare.
It's great knowing I'm covered for the future, but I gotta go, Bill, and get all this food unloaded.
With scorching heat devastating U.S. cropland, there's never been a better time to visit SafetyNetSavings.com. That's SafetyNetSavings.com. Visit SafetyNetSavings.com today.
Big Berkey water filters are in high demand. Storable foods are also in high demand. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has always kept our focus on the Berkey water filter products. But increasingly, our customers have been asking for storable foods. After months of research, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com now offers great-tasting, long-lasting, storable foods. These ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches. All you do is just add water. And because they're sealed so well, they come with a 25-year shelf life. Combine our Berkey water filters, which are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water with our storable foods, and you have a winning combination. Remember, we offer free shipping on every order over $50, and GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today.
You know that drinking pure, high-alkaline water is one of the most important factors in maintaining high energy and vibrant health, and most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops, available only at AlkaVision.com, combine a unique formula of most alkaline minerals available. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops alkalize your water, ridding the body of harmful toxins and acid, helping you to regain your energy and health. Alkalizing your water by simply adding 10 drops of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops helps the body to rid itself of acidic waste, increases oxygen, and raises the pH of your body to optimal levels. And bacteria and viruses cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops for only $29.95 at AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or call 269-409-1776. 269-409-1776. Alkalize your body. Supercharge your health at AlkaVision.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So, does the government know what it's doing? And if so, when? And how? And when's that going to happen? I've never seen a situation here, parenthetically speaking, where fewer people than ever, especially in this country, accept anything the government does as evidence of competence. We have Lamont Wood. The book is called Out of Place in Time and Space with Gene and Chris and the Paracast, and that's another question here. With these anomalous things going on, do we see evidence that governments 50, 100, 1,000 years ago, that they knew what they were doing? Or
no,
were they just as inefficient?
They were just as inefficient. They had occasionally took on impressive projects that still mystify us. But one of the reasons it mystifies us, we can't figure out why they did it. There's no obvious purpose in it, except maybe to put somebody's name on it, like the pyramid or whatever. I mean,
the equivalent of a bridge to nowhere.
Right, a bridge to nowhere, exactly. And a lot of these things are that, bridges to nowhere. Are we supposed to be impressed by this? I really don't think so. They're nice monuments, but should we run out and duplicate them? No. Let's do something useful, you know what I mean?
Now,
some wacky leader.
Some wacky dictator says, I'm going to have a monument to me. If it takes 100 years to build, I don't care. But go ahead and do it, otherwise you'll be whipped to death.
Like Muammar Gaddafi and his canal system that's state-of-the-art, world-class, and should be probably duplicated by other countries around the world. A classic example.
Okay, well, at least some of these things are probably make-work programs, you know what I mean? It kept people employed. But And some of them probably, at least a couple of them that I use in examples in here were at least accessible to the common man and were pretty to look at. The Parthenon, for instance, I use that as an example. It's a building we really don't understand. It has all these visual refinements in it. For one, we could not duplicate nowadays to save our lives. And two, we don't know why they did it. It appears to be have been designed so that a person standing in front of it, viewing through his curved eyeball, would perceive it as being perfectly rectilinear. Why was that important? Had they built it to be actually rectilinear, like we do nowadays, it wouldn't look that much different. Most of these refinements you can only find with careful measurements. But they managed to get it in there, and it's now thought that there's not one single building stone in the thing that's actually rectilinear straight angles. They've all been carefully sculpted as part of this master plan of an optical illusion. What's the point? You know, we really don't know how they did it. We could guess, you know, they polished these stones very carefully. We know the Greeks were heavily into geometry, and this must have taken all their skills. But again, why do that? Again, great makework project, I guess. Get those geometricians out there and, you know, put them to work.
They had all these unemployed peasants, and they had to give them some employment, put them on the government dole and all that stuff.
And all those, like I say, all those geometricians, you know, get them.
But why do we want to believe that there was some kind of interaction with an advanced civilization?
An advanced civilization would have used trigonometry to do the same thing, and we've probably gotten different results for one thing.
They used their calculators.
Right. And the other thing is, why would an advanced civilization care? Why would anyone care? Why did they care? It has no purpose that we can figure out. Except when you're standing in front of it. And so you give you some idea of perfection, I guess. That was their idea of it. They had to impress the gods somehow. Now, I think the gods they were talking about were the ones Olympian heaven and not the ones in the UFOs. But beyond that, we don't know. They never explain themselves. And this is from, historic times, documented eras, a period of time when we have people writing memoirs and histories and all that stuff, and they do not explain it.
How far back can we go with some of these anomalous artifacts, at least in your research?
The oldest one I came across, apparently, is a Sphinx, which you'd think would be explained and documented, and everyone knows what it is. It turns out, actually, no, we don't know what's going on with it.
Explain this in more detail for our listeners.
Okay, well, the Sphinx sits on the edge of the Giza Plateau, by the Nile. The Giza Plateau is the place where all the pyramids and quite a few other tombs are located that the pharaohs built. Now, most of these tombs and pyramids, et cetera, are fairly easy to date because they got the guy's name on it. And these things were built cheek and jowl around the Sphinx in a way that suggests that the Sphinx was there first and they had to build around it. Okay, the newer things, the datable things, you can still see chisel marks on them. The rainfall there is only about an inch a year. But the Sphinx itself, when you look at it, you find obvious signs of water erosion. Yet, like I say, the monuments around it show no water erosion. You have to presume it's actually much older than the monuments around it. How much older? Well, the last time there was significant rain there was during the last ice age. And that puts us back to like 7,000 BC, which is kind of odd because then who did build it? That would require some culture living there at the time that can handle heavy masonry construction, yet didn't build anything else or leave any other artifacts. So not a single tomb, not a single piece of pottery. So that's mystifying. We don't know how to proceed there. Now, there are people who take a middle ground and say, well, during all the construction, when the pharaohs were so busy, maybe the runoff got really screwy and it all flowed toward the Sphinx. And that may in fact be true, but they still think there's too much water erosion there to account for that. So this is another one where I don't really tend to explain it. I just say that there is this controversy and everything, you know, we thought we knew about the Sphinx is in fact conjecture. We don't really know who built it, why, fairly know how, I guess, but we don't know who built it, why, and when. But that's the oldest, most mystifying thing in the book, I believe.
Really? So that would be your vote for the most enigmatic of all the ancient.
All the ancient things I've come across so far. Anyway, now of course there's the pyramids next door, but we know who built them and when. We don't know why. I keep running across these people talking about how the measurements are used in making the pyramids, how precise they were, and how good the surveying was, et cetera, et cetera, and how this makes it a mystery or something. And I have to point out, the shipyard I worked in 40 years ago, in a previous lifetime, the ship fitters were required to be accurate within 1/32nd of an inch. And the biggest tool I saw them using was string that was covered with powdered chalk. And you take one end of the string, you hold it over one point, and you take the other end of the string, hold it over another point, you stretch it tight, and then you'll plink, and it leaves a nice little line between the two holes, between the two points. And with that, they were able to maintain the accuracy within 1/32nd of an inch. Of course, they had, you know, measuring sticks and all that stuff, but lasers and all, I don't remember any of that. Optical instruments, I don't really remember that either. It was all human eyeball stuff. And they got to within 1/32nd of an inch. I'm pretty sure the pharaohs had that same technology with the taut string and stuff. And last measurements I ever saw on the Great Pyramid was that the base was like 750 feet long or so. And they were accurate to within 50 millimeters, which sounds impressive, but in a shipyard that would not have been permissible. That ship wouldn't have floated. You had to be, like, say, within 1/32nd of an inch, and that's only about 2 or 3 millimeters. So, and like I say, they use unaided eyeballs for most of it. So I really think that the construction of the pyramid shows the kind of accuracy that you would expect, considering they had a bunch of guys out there in the desert using taut string. So are you following me so far?
Absolutely. I've used the string line many times.
Right, right. And it works well when you do it right. It takes a little practice. It takes three people rather than, you know, one person with the laser, so we've abandoned all that nowadays. But it does work.
Okay, you know, it works. It works to tell you that we have Lamont Wood, mm-hmm. who has written a book called Out of Place in Time and Space. If you're listening to Gene and Chris, and of course you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
If you owe the IRS money you can't pay, then listen carefully, because you already know that the problem won't go away by itself. You can get help today from the leading tax expert in the country, Dan Pilla.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. The IRS isn't going to just forget about you. Right now, the IRS is hiring thousands of tax collectors to go after delinquent accounts just like yours. That's why you need to take action today, and I can help. I take a simple but proven approach to solving your tax debt problem. First, I stabilize collections so you don't have to worry about wage and bank levies. Next, I build a detailed plan to get your debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even eliminated. Finally, I work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. So call now for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829.
Dan Pilla will solve your tax problem, guaranteed. He's helped thousands of people, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
If you drive for a living, You don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
Positive results from satisfied customers of Heart and Body Extract continue to pour into our website, hbextract.com.
This is Al from New Jersey. One day I saw your ad for Heart and Body Extract, and it mentioned that it would help me with angina, so I decided to order. I figure I had nothing to lose.
Heart and Body Extract supplies your body with everything it needs to balance itself and maintain optimal heart and circulatory health with no negative side effects.
I took the formula 3 times a day as directed, and I kid you not, within 4 days, my angina pain was completely gone.
Order HB Extract by calling 866-295-5305 or online at hbextract.com. That's 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
I could not believe it actually stopped the pain. Heart and Body Extract actually works. This is just an amazing product. Even the numbness in my hands is completely gone.
Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Back with Gene and Chris with Lamont Wood. We're talking about his book, Out of Place in Time and Space, about inventions, beliefs, and artistic anomalies that were impossibly ahead of their time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, everything you're telling me so far, they're one-off, two-offs, they're things that happened and didn't happen again. So we forgot about pyramids after we built a few.
Right. Exactly. Now, a different theme, there's the Pantheon in Rome, and it covers a couple of themes we're talking about ancient buildings we don't understand and mysteries, and but also about technology that was once known, then abandoned, and then rediscovered, oddly enough. Concrete. If anyone ever even reads into the history of that, it's too prosaic, I think, for most people to follow, but usually depicted as being part and parcel of the Industrial Revolution, mostly for financial reasons. With the Industrial Revolution, they had the kind of accumulation of capital that could successfully demand the accelerated construction of large buildings. And with that, you really needed concrete. And we can trace it back to a British patent issued in 1799. And it's all true, and nothing wrong with that story. And then you go back to ancient Rome and discover these buildings made out of concrete, which is a little odd. But again, during the Roman Empire, they had the kinds of accumulation of capital that could successfully demand that large buildings be erected quickly instead of relying on quarried stone. In pre-scientific times, the only thing you could do was quarry the stone and let it sit out for about 2 years and see if it crumbled or not. If it didn't crumble, then you would use it. So obviously you couldn't have any kind of accelerated building pace. But with concrete, you pour the stuff and you're done. It takes about a month to set and harden completely, and then you're ready to go. And you can use forms to get any shape you want. Concrete is made by taking limestone and heating until it crumbles. The Romans apparently had access to seams of limestone that had been heated by volcanic activity. And so they got the same effect. And in the middle of ancient Rome, modern Rome also, there's this thing called the Pantheon, which is the largest freestanding concrete dome in the world. It's a freestanding rotunda. There's rotunda nowadays, it would be like the Capitol building. There's offices on either side of it. And the rotunda is in the middle and gives it some dignity to otherwise sterile collection of offices. In this case, it's just the rotunda itself. We don't know why it's there, except just to have a huge building, apparently. we would not dare build such things nowadays without rebar, but they were clever and got by without it and used like large marble fragments and very thick walls, which became thinner and thinner. At the top, they're using like pumice or something. So far, so good. But then we have to, again, going back to the theme of complete mysteries of why they built it, usually it's described as a temple. But Roman temples were built with particular purposes in mind and usually had rooms devoted to particular purposes, including the inner sanctum and rooms around that. It usually faced the rising sun, for instance. The Pantheon has one door. It faces the north. There's no space inside of it for inner sanctum. It's all just one open rotunda, the big open space, round space in the middle. We can't see that it ever contained anything. There is a inscription on front of it. Instead of a dedication, as you would expect from a Roman temple, it's a credit line, and it credits to its construction to someone who died in 12 BC, which is odd because we know the building was constructed in 126 AD, which is 130 years later. So the inscription is wrong. So we don't know what's going on with this building. We don't know who built it, why. We kind of know how. It's using a technology we thought we invented, but it turns out they knew all about it in Republican and in Imperial Rome. So again, we have something out of place in time and space, basically.
Speaking of temples, let's talk about Baalbek for a minute and the trilithon stones, the three stones that make up the podium. Each one is in excess of 800 tons.
Right.
Now, some engineers have kind of said today that we would have a very difficult, if not impossible, time actually quarrying, hewing, and transporting and setting in place these particular huge monoliths. Do you think that they had some sort of advanced technology that allowed them to do this? How could just sheer muscle power have, first of all, quarried, hewn, and then transported and set in place these particular stones? You don't mention this in your book.
Well, quarrying and hewing is not that demanding if you have enough people involved. You drill round holes and you put wooden wedges in and you soak the wedges. And you bang on the stone between the holes as the wedges expand and crack the thing. And that gets you started, basically. And you don't need fancy tools. The thing would be getting it there, especially getting it there without breaking it. And if you had enough people involved, I'm quite sure you could. And if this was some kind of make-work program, the more the merrier. And,
but that still implies efficiency. You're going to get hundreds of thousands of people together on a project that's going to take, what, decades to finish?
Perhaps.
Easily.
The pyramids took 20 years. The pyramids had like 20,000 people working on them at a time, and it took like 20 years to build. And that didn't seem to have been an issue.
Talking about, you know, 1 to 3 ton stones. We're talking almost 1,000 ton blocks.
Okay, well, remember the pyramid, it's like totally about 5 million tons worth of stone. So, and there were individual blocks inside of it that were up to 100 tons. So,
not 1,000 tons. We couldn't even lift 1,000 ton stone today.
Perhaps not. I really don't know, but I suspect they must have found somewhere to do it because there it is. I mean, I'm going back to Occam's razor here. Again, if you have enough wedges and enough people involved, and keep in mind, too, the thing isn't, you don't finish it until you get there. So you leave knobs on it for attaching ropes and things. So there's all sorts of tricks.
Must you always assume there's a simple explanation? Or as simple as you can imagine for the period of time that this happened.
Uncle Occam would say that.
Yes.
Well, yeah, Uncle Occam would demand that I do so. And again, I'm going to stick with him. Because
but is Uncle Occam always right?
No, sometimes he's wrong. And but if you want to invoke, you know, extraterrestrials or something, anything is possible.
I'm not saying it has to be E.T. Okay. I'm just saying is, we're trying to craft an explanation that allows for the technology that we know about, that we knew possibly existed in their time. We're imagining efficient construction companies efficient governments to manage a project that takes 20 years to finish.
Right, right. Well, that,
aren't we stretching a little bit here? Inefficient government?
This is true, but you got to remember, sitting here, we don't really know the technology they're using. I ran across the fact that where I live in San Antonio during the 20s, they moved some buildings out of a floodplain and very carefully in position. Without anyone really, there were people still inside the buildings working, being the 20s, they didn't use many utilities. And what they did is they put them on large blocks of ice and slid the ice into the new location along these pathways they built. Is that technology more advanced than what was used then? Not much, really. I bet they had access to ice, too. So
in Lebanon?
Yes, it's called winter, you bet. And so what I'm saying is just all sorts of things they could have done, and combinations of those things. Just sitting here, we can't really probe them all or assess them all. So I think Uncle Occam would again demand that we assume that they figured out some way to do it, based on the fact that it is there, and et cetera.
Are you familiar with the work of Christopher Dunn, who has traveled around megalithic sites all around the world, and in a very convincing way, come up with evidence that it seems that ancient megalithic builders had some sort of power tools where they were able to actually create impossibly perfect straight line cuts, cuts on a curve, that would suggest that they had technology that we don't normally assume, Uncle Occam aside, that we don't normally assume that they had. Also, evidence of the possibility of Egyptians having electric lights, for instance, to work in very dark underground construction sites.
I'll tell you Chris, the lights will be turned off if we don't do this. We're talking to Lamont Wood with Gene and Chris on
the Paracast. That was good, G.
Someone tickling your toes.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.